Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, Doug Plank will be here. Doug Plank, the former Chicago Bears safety and now NFL analyst, will join us to talk about the Chicago Bears. They got the Houston Texans on Sunday. This is essentially the season has started. When you think about it, I mean, this is the week leading up to season one. We've seen a lot of movement on the waiver wire, and we'll talk about what to expect from the game on Sunday and the Bears season as a whole. Also, musician Andrew Bird. Andrew Bird, the multi-instrumentalist violinist, is going to be at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park tomorrow night. Tremendous musician. And, I mean, one with Chicago roots. He spent a ton of time here in Chicago. Now he's worldwide. But amazing to get a chance to talk with Andrew Bird here on The Download coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, my guest tonight at the big table has dedicated his life to helping improve communities, education, to stress the importance of parental development. Philip Jackson started the Black Star Project 20 years ago. Jackson's no stranger to Chicago. He's been part of the team that took over Chicago Public Schools in 1995. He was also the head of the Chicago Housing Authority back in 1999. But since that time, he's been working with several Chicago communities to promote peace, to curb violence, and to emphasize education. Jackson organized community peace surges this weekend, you may have read about it, to help combat violence in select neighborhoods. And today, he held his annual Million Father March to have fathers take their kids to the first day of school. As the stories of safe passages, teacher strikes, and homicides continue to dominate the news cycle, we turn to people like Philip Jackson to go beyond the headlines. And he's my guest tonight at the big table. Philip Jackson, thanks for being here.
This is a wonderful opportunity to really put out the word about what happened in Chicago this week.
Yeah, let's start with today. The Million Father March. This is something you've been doing annually for a couple of years
13
now.
13 years.
Talk about this. This is really a movement to get dads involved in their kids' education.
This started in a church basement on the south side of Chicago 13 years ago. St. Paul and the Redeemer, 50th and Dorchester, and we had 9 black men and 1 Latino man, and they pretty much, you know, were there 3 weeks before school started, and they said, well, what can we do? What can we do? We want to do something special. And so we took 2 ideas. One of the ideas was from the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Million Man March.
Right.
We said, let's go for a million, and we're going to try to get a million eventually, maybe not this year, men to take their children to school. And the other idea comes to us from South America, where on the last day of school, not the first, fathers and men go up to the schools to thank the principal, thank the teacher, thank the cook, thank the janitor, to thank anybody who had anything to do with educating their child. And so we said, well, let's combine the 2 ideas and let's call it the Million Father March.
Why is it important to have kids bring their, or for parents, especially fathers, to bring their kids to school on the first day?
It is very, very important. What we have found is that, number one, when fathers or men, surrogates, it doesn't even have to be the biological father, but when there's a man involved in a child's life, children learn faster, learn better, learn more, are more likely to graduate, have higher grade point averages, and conversely, they're less likely to get into trouble. Girls are less likely to become pregnant. Boys are less likely to engage in violence, less likely to become involved with gangs, simply from a father or a man, a male, just being in their lives. And so it's almost like magic. You know, the Chicago Public Schools, and they started today, they have challenges. Let us just say that.
Sure.
If they wanted, if they seriously wanted to address their challenges, they would get men involved. And so today at the Oglesby Elementary School, which is on the south side of Chicago, in one of those tough neighborhoods that we're talking about, where the peace surge happened, in one of those tough neighborhoods where we're talking about, there are not a lot of positive men. There are not a lot of good role models. We had 300 men, and men of all races, who came from everywhere and said, let us be the models for these children in this inner city school. The children were in heaven. The children were walking on air as they came into the school to the claps and the cheers of the men. And this didn't just happen in Oglesby. It happened in schools all across the city of Chicago. It happened in schools all across Illinois. It happened in 600 cities. We are in 600 cities right now. The big states are Texas, California, Florida, New York.
Is it amazing to see how this has grown over 13 years for you to be in Chicago and sit with the 8 or 9 people that were in that church basement that think now, wow, this is happening in so many different places around the whole country?
Yeah. You know, I do have to express my disappointment with Chicago. Chicago has not embraced the Million Father March. I mean, other cities.
How so? What do you mean? The city proper?
The city proper, the school system proper? Mm-hmm. They haven't embraced it. They think that other things are more important than getting men involved in the lives of children. And I'm here to tell you, no, I'm not here. Your police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, is here to tell you that if he doesn't get more support from parents, he has no chance. No chance.
That was
of
a big
the violence mean, on in the, Chicago. He has none.
The two, and we're going to get to that as well in this hour. But the what I thought was interesting today is we saw parental involvement really sort of take center stage in two ways. One, safe passages.
Yes,
which became like a big storyline again to make sure the kids had a safe route to get to school. For those listening at home who may be listening to WGN who don't understand that necessarily, what is a safe passage? Why is that important? Why is it important to have a sort of monitored space to get to school?
Well, what we also have found out, and Black Star, we've been doing this work for 20 years. So we know a little bit about children and we know a little bit about schools. And what we know is that children who fear violence do less well in school academically. They have a kind of post-traumatic stress syndrome from their communities, and they don't focus on learning. And so by providing safe passages, and that's a Chicago public school program that actually provides monitors, if you will, on various street corners so that the children will know that they can walk up and down that street and they'll be safe. We have found, and the parents have found, and the schools have found, and the children have found, it's a program that works.
So it's not necessarily like a path that you find. It's the idea that kids know they're in a safe space there's somebody on the corner.
Absolutely. And on many corners.
Right. With the yellow penny
with
on.
The vest.
Right.
Yes.
We're talking with Philip Jackson. He's the head of Black Star Project. They're celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. And I want to get to the second part, which is about Eddie Johnson today when he addressed the violence and the big numbers over the weekend here in Labor Day
Huge
holiday.
Huge numbers.
He talked about parental involvement. And he talked
I think
about,
he's a little off base, we'll get there.
We'll get there. Philip Jackson, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. My guest at the big table, Philip Jackson, former head of the Chicago Housing Authority, and he's also the man behind Black Star Project, which was started 20 years ago, community activist, organizer. He was a man behind the Million Father Marches in Chicago today at Oglesby and other places, but also...
Born in public housing, grew up in a Robert Taylor home.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask you about growing up in Chicago. I want to get there. But so many different credits, because the one thing you did this weekend was something that surprisingly got less coverage than I thought it would. I actually saw it in the Washington Post, which was interesting that it was seemed to get national coverage as opposed to just local. It was this idea of the community peace surge. You know, surge is a word that's been used by police. It's been used over time, but you never really hear about it when it comes to peace. Talk about what goes into a community peace surge.
Right. Well, the reason that the community peace surge started and got its name is because the Fraternal Order of Police, a month and a half ago, said, you know what? We're taking off Labor Day weekend. And so we knew. We said, wait a minute. If you guys take off Labor Day weekend, we're going to have a purge. There are going to be, you know, just numerous killings and shootings. You're the police. You can't take off Labor Day weekend. So we thought the Fraternal Order of Police, Dean Angelo, I believe, said, right. Nope, our guys, they deserve a day off. We're going to tell them to be with their families. Good luck. And that's when we said, okay, they're planning a purge. They're planning to have chaos run through our communities. So what we did, we took out maps, police maps, if you will, and we looked at the communities, the 10 communities with the highest rates of violence.
Now, we've heard about this because the superintendent was on the news today talking about that there's select communities where most of this violence comes from. What are some of the communities we're talking about here?
I'm going to do this, and I hate to do it because I don't like to demonize communities.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to mention them, but I don't like to do it.
Right.
Inglewood, West Inglewood, New City, Auburn, Gresham, Roseland, South Shore, Chatham, North Lawndale, Austin, Garfield Park.
And this is where you set
Humboldt
up.
Park.
These are the neighborhoods where you set
the
up.
The toughest neighborhoods in the city. That's where, obviously, if you're going to take on crime, you got to go where crime is. But I don't like to do that. You know what? We found that there are great people who live in all those communities. We found in each of those communities, there were people out working before we got there. They were doing the kind of things to make those communities better before the peace surge, before we got there. And that's why I don't like to say these are the 10 worst communities. I don't like to say that. Right. But the police
have made it clear in the last couple months. They're like, these are the select communities where it's happening.
That's probably a point, one of the points, because people look at me and say, you know, you did a peace surge, so you're competing with the police. No. I support the police. I like the police. I mean, I actually like the concept. We need the police. So we weren't competing with them. We were working with them to bring peace to Chicago in the toughest communities in Chicago where they have not been able to.
How does it work? What does a community peace surge look like on the ground? What is it that you're doing to try and tend to support and promote peace and curb violence?
And so there were three major components of the community peace surge. Number one, get out. Come out of your house. Have some courage at night, during the day, during the morning. Knock on your neighbor's door. Meet your neighbors. Talk to people, young people on your blocks. So that's a major component. Just getting to know who your neighbors are in your community. Part of it was for the churches. Come out and pray on the blocks. For fraternities. Have parties on the block, but take over your neighborhood. Take over your blocks. Those blocks belong to you. Now, a lot of people said early on, they said, oh, man, you're going to get somebody killed. No one got killed doing what we were asking. There were a lot of people killed. 13 people were killed, but they were not killed doing activities of the peace surge. But that's number one. Number two, we asked people to clean up their blocks, clean up your front, clean up your whole street, clean up your alley, plant flowers, pull up weeds. And so we think that possibly hundreds of tons of trash and debris were removed from these communities. Mm-hmm. We drove up and down the streets. We saw people in those same 10 communities that some people call bad communities. They were out cleaning up the whole block, two block, three blocks areas. Number three, we asked the people in those communities, talk to the young people, give them constructive things to do. You know, you create parties, create, you know, gyms, basketball. And we also told them, go up to the gangbangers, go up to the shooters and talk to them and let them know about the community peace surge and tell them, you know, just tell them honestly. You are destroying this neighborhood. You're destroying it, not just for us, for you. Many people did that. And guess what? They responded. The gangbangers, many of them responded. The shooters responded.
That's what I was going to ask.
Not enough of them. Not enough of them.
Because I want to get to the lessons, and we'll get to that coming up here, the lessons learned, because you put together a document about that. But I'm interested in when you, address a young man, a shooter, and tell them about the community peace surge. How do you do that? How do you talk to somebody who's already been sort of, this is their livelihood, this is what they do. They're killing this weekend.
Well, you see, you really have, and this is where, you know, I can't fault the police chief, but he really doesn't have an understanding of certain aspects of the communities that he's policing.
When he's saying that it's parents need to get involved.
When he's saying that it's parents. When he's saying that it's the courts, when he's saying that it's guns. I mean, all of that is part of it, but that's not really the essence of it. The essence of it in these communities that we're talking about, those same 10 communities, it's despair. It's a loss of hope. It's a loss of opportunity. It's disinvestment in those communities. And you know, and a lot of people say, oh, see, I knew he was going to go there. I'm going there because our research shows that when young men have jobs, they don't shoot each other. When there are fully functioning families, then the children are not participating in those kind of activities. And so that's what the community peace search was. It was rebuilding communities, retransforming communities back into what communities used to be. Those same communities that I just named, and I'm going to name a few of them again. South Shore, Chatham, Auburn-Gresham, Inglewood, Austin. Those used to be some of the best communities in Chicago. There was not a community in Chicago better than those communities I just named. And many of those communities, they still have descendants of the people who lived in them. So it's kind of the same people. Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, what happened?
You're right.
What changed? And that's where I don't think, and by the way, Eddie, Superintendent Johnson sounds like a good man and a reasonable man. But he's out of his league when it comes to trying to understand sociological.
You mentioned that. You mentioned that, you know, a couple of weeks ago it was guns and you know, there's a lot of factors that go in and the police chief seems to point to. But today's was all about parental involvement. He says people come to him when he's back in his neighborhood and they say, where are the parents? Where are the parents? You've been involved in, you know, you do parental development.
For 20 years.
Is the superintendent wrong in that sense? I mean, it may not be the overall wholeness of it, but it is a part of it.
Yeah. You see, I don't think he's wrong, but I don't think that he's the one to actually make this statement. So I'm not saying he's wrong. We need the people, kind of like myself, who've been trying to get this city to focus on parent development for 25 years. To be the ones to bring it up be the ones recognized.
Yeah, you mean the government. You mean that not just the city of Chicago as a whole, you, me, and the people around. You're talking about like institutionalized
the corporate entity,
parental
the
development.
City, everybody, and I am talking about the people as well, because we have found that parental development is a key aspect of community development, that you really can't do serious and successful community development without parent development. And so the question becomes, okay, then where are the systems? You know, where are the programs that actually do what you say is needed? And so the question should be asked to Superintendent Eddie Johnson. All right, sir, you say we need more parent development. Where are the programs? Who's working on it? And right now, he's going to have to answer you. There's really nothing out there. Well, then he's not qualified at that point to say we need more parent development.
Philip Jackson is my guest tonight. He is the man behind Black Star Project, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary this season or this year. I guess it's not anniversary, but something of that.
No. It's boots on the ground, fighting the problems,
right, 20
solving
year,
the
commemorating
problem.
Yes, 20
sir.
Years
That's
of
right.
being
work.
A community group. Philip Jackson, my guest at the big table. We'll come back after the news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Here's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Philip Jackson, the man behind Black Star Project, 20 years in business. We'll talk about that coming up as well as your life, Philip. I mean, you were CEO of the CHA, a guy who grew up in public housing at Robert Taylor.
Born in Aug Hill Gardens.
Really?
Yes.
See, we got to talk. I mean, there's so much that goes. I mean, for you to have seen Chicago through those eyes, through that experience.
I attended 11 Chicago public schools and became the chief of staff for public schools.
You got a lot going on. All right, so let's talk about the community peace surge that you did this weekend and the lessons, because today you spent time putting up the lessons that you learned from this
Absolutely.
Weekend. So talk about, because on first glance, you would think a community peace surge was about curbing violence.
Right.
This ended up being the most violent holiday weekend of 2016 and one that continues a trend that shows us having, you know, dating back 10 years, 15, 20 years. So do you, first let me ask this question. Do you see it as a success or a failure?
I see it as a success. But let me create the context for this. In Chicago right now, this year so far, we've had about 3,000 shootings. 3,000 people being wounded here in Chicago. The University of Chicago Crime Lab says that every gunshot wound costs the city of Chicago $1 million in societal costs, total costs, everything from going to the emergency room, the policemen who get involved, the long-term care, the image of Chicago, $1 million. Now, we've had 3,000 people who've been shot. So right now, easily, $3 billion is down the toilet just from people being shot. August, the most violent month in the past 20 years, 481 people shot, 81 people murdered. Last weekend, the weekend before last, 72 people shot. This weekend, 66 people shot, 53 shot, 13 kills, 66 total. We need something. Whatever we're doing is not working, and that's where we came up with the peace search. We said we've got to get the community involved. We know, as everyone knows now, the police by themselves have no chance of stopping violence in Chicago. You know, they've got this algorithm that they use, and they can predict, so they say, who the shooters are going to be, and they also say they can predict who's going to be shot.
This is the 12 to 1400.
That is correct.
There's a list. There's a list. Right, right.
And the question becomes, if you know who the shooters are, and you know where they live, and you know who their victims are, why can't we stop the shooting? And so really, it's much more complex than that. So we learned a lot of lessons this week from the community peace surge. Number one, we learned that no peace surge can be one day, one weekend, one week, one month, or even one year. And so we learned that we went about it the wrong way, thinking that we could start from zero and come up to 100 in one weekend and stop violence. However, in many ways, that's what the police are doing. So they say, we're going to prepare for that big holiday weekend. That's not how you do it. You'll always be behind.
And how do you do it then? So holistically, you need to invest into a 10, 15, 20-year process.
At the very least, for next Labor Day, we should have started preparing today. Now, that's at the very least. Possibly, we should have started preparing for next Labor Day 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
So it's a way we have to shift the way we think.
Oh, absolutely. The way we think is a huge part of the problem as to why we're in the condition that we're in Chicago.
We start every day fresh when we shouldn't be starting
absolutely.
Fresh.
And that's what
building.
We do, and that's what we're encouraging. Now, let me give you just one idea. And so the police are really big on these raids. And so this past week, they arrested 77 gang members. That means that they didn't learn a lesson from the 4th of July. The 4th of July, they arrested, I think, 125 gang members, and they had the worst 4 weeks of shooting that they ever had. So this week, they said, well, let us arrest 77 and look at what it gave us. For the final total.
What's the correlation? What do you think the issue is?
The correlation is that many times by arresting gang members, you actually create a little more chaos in the communities. There's almost a kind of sick and maybe sad stability when you leave those gang members in place. Unfortunately, I don't like to say that. But once you pull them out, now there are 2, 3, 4 other people vying for that same position and willing to shoot and kill. To take that.
That's position. Interesting. I didn't think about this. So it's almost like they audition, if you want to say
yes,
it that
sir.
Way, to say they want to take over that corner. Or I'm not using the right lingo, but that the concept, right?
Yeah. We found from this community peace search that the majority of big businesses in the city of Chicago have no interest in stopping violence in Chicago. They don't have an interest. They don't see the connection between violence and Inglewood and doing business on North Michigan Avenue.
And where do you get where? That's a lesson learned from the community peace surge. What is that, lesson?
That's a lesson.
It's
learned.
A lesson that nobody invested. Nobody.
No
cared,
one invested.
Nobody?
Zero. We had zero investment. And so here's another lesson. The foundation community here in Chicago are emotionally unattached to the issue of violence in Chicago.
Do you think that might change in the sense that it becomes a national storyline? It becomes a negative mark on Chicago's reputation that foundations and big businesses and corporations here may go, I want to get involved now because my New York brethren are talking about it. My California brethren are talking about it. I want to get involved now. Is that possible that might happen?
Right now. Right now. The violence in Chicago has become bad for business on North Michigan Avenue, on State Street, throughout Chicago. Excuse me. And they're finding out now that they cannot contain the violence. You cannot keep the violence in Inglewood. You cannot keep the violence in Roseland. It is now seeping over onto the north side, into the Gold Coast, into Lincoln Park. That same violence that the business community was not interested in, that foundations were emotionally unattached to, that same violence is now coming to every part of Chicago. And now nobody is safe. Now the people on the north side are as nervous as the people who live in Woodland.
Let me just say that is by the idea that foundations and corporations have not invested, they emotionally have
they've been disinvested.
Disinvested. When they get to shootings on North Lakeshore Drive or shootings over here in Gold Coast or right here on Michigan Avenue, does that kind of spillover, does that grab their attention?
Well,
do they say, okay, now I want in because it was one of my employees that was caught in the crossfire?
No, I really don't think they care. But what you said earlier, I think, might have more sway. When other national foundations around the country, when other Fortune 50 companies, Fortune 250 companies, start looking at these guys and go, why are you letting that violence happen in your city? You know, what are you doing to stop it? Then these companies will take heed. You know, unfortunately, money talks. And when they start getting hit in the pocketbook, and when these foundations, when their, you know, pristine reputations start taking a hit, then they're going to start listening to the community and doing more to help the community stop the violence. Right now, two things. Big business is uninterested in stopping the violence. Foundations are emotionally detached. So whether it was, 56 people shot, 66, 160, they don't really care. They're going to keep doing what they're doing. That's what we have found from the community peace surge.
All right, give me one more lesson. I know you've got millions, but
I've got quite a few. But I'll give you one.
Give me one, yeah.
The violence in Chicago is related to violence in America. So what's happening in Chicago is a macrocosm of what's happening all across the country. We've been getting reports in Black Star all day that many cities around the country had similar kinds of violence. Now, such as Baltimore. Now, Baltimore didn't have 66 shootings.
Right.
They had 20. But Baltimore
is a lot smaller. Chicago, right.
And so when we're getting these reports from all over the country. Now, I do have to say, New York.
Yeah, that's the one everyone will say that's an anomaly because why
they had two murders.
Right.
Two in New York.
Why? Why do they have two and we have 52?
No, two murders. And right. We had 13.
13. Okay, yeah. So why do we have 13 and they have two?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. Part of it is
absolutely, I believe, the way that Chicago, and this is Philip speaking, the way that Chicago is treating certain communities that are mostly African American, that are mostly poor, that are mostly, you know, lowly educated. The way that Chicago is treating those communities is a big part of what is causing the violence. In other cities like New York, for various reasons, they're not doing those same kind of things.
Philip Jackson is the head of the Black Star Project, which is commemorating its 20th year in business. Let's take a quick break. Come back and I want to talk about your life. I want to talk about growing up. We've thrown nuggets around about your bio, but let's talk about your relationship to Chicago, what you've seen through your eyes. Philip Jackson, my guest here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin, my guest in studio at the big table, Philip Jackson. Philip Jackson, former CEO of the Chicago Housing Authority. He's chief of staff at Chicago Public Schools back in 1995. He now runs Black Star Project, which is 20 years old this year.
That is correct.
That's unbelievable to think about. Okay, Philip, what I really want to get at, I mean, you've got such an experience as a Chicagoan from growing up, born and raised in public housing, growing up Robert Taylor Homes. For you to be a CEO of the Chicago Housing Authority, you've seen Chicago in so many different ways. Let's start from your days growing up in Robert Taylor. Is it better or is it worse when it comes to violence, when it comes to crime, when it comes to what we're seeing in the streets of Chicago today?
Well, for certain communities, and first of all, let me start with this. I love Chicago. Now, I've traveled to many countries. I've traveled to you know, the continent of Africa, the continent of Asia, the continent of Europe. You know, so I've been many places. I always come back to Chicago. I love Chicago. So let's start there. Chicago is two different cities. There is one city that is violent. There is one city that, for the most part, is not. There is one city that is poor. There is one part of the city that is not. There is one city where your children are going to get one of the worst educations in the world. And then there's one part of the city where your children are going to get one of the best educations in the world.
Yeah.
So that's the context that we're living in.
Has that always been the case, though? I mean, from you and growing up in Chicago, was it like that then?
Well, it was a little bit different because when I was growing up, there was much more opportunity. So if we just look at downtown Chicago right now, which I used to work. By the way, you didn't mention I was a corporate guy. I was VP operations, senior vice president of operations for Crocs and Brentano's as well and other things. So I'm a corporate guy. But when I worked in these same offices, when I built stores up and down Michigan Avenue, I did that. This was a different city demographically. For every white person I saw a black person. You know, it was racially more diverse, especially in the business district.
Than today.
Today, really? I can walk up and down a block during the middle of the day, and I may not see a black person. Now, and by the way, and I'm willing, I hope you're going to ask me, I need you to ask me what part of that is the fault of black people. And I want to answer that. But there's also a fault of the rest of the city of Chicago for creating this space where, unfortunately, black children don't feel welcome and where black children can't thrive and succeed. And as I said, I want to talk about the fault the responsibility of black people.
Let's go there. I mean, the black community, you saw that with Superintendent Johnson today talking about parental involvement. There's been talk about, you know, pull up by the bootstraps, you know, hard work, get your kids off the corner. A lot of finger pointing at community. What role does the black community play in violence in the city?
All right. Well, first of all, finger pointing means nothing. Even if it's coming from the superintendent of police, that means nothing. The question that has to be asked to the superintendent of police, you want parent development? What are you going to do to create and produce parent development in those communities that you say we need parent development in? And if you're not going to do anything, you really shouldn't talk about it. Now, the black community, in my opinion, plays a major role in our own dysfunctionality. Our churches have failed us miserably. Our elected officials have failed us. Our civil rights groups have failed us. And that filters down to the community level. And so our communities start to unravel. And that filters down into the homes. Our homes start to unravel. You know, a lot of people say, well, people ought to. They should just do what's right. That's not the way the world works. The world works in a very intelligent, systematic, coordinated fashion. And so we have to create structures and systems that can assist and help people do these things that we say we want them to do. Simply to say, you know, you ought to take care of your kids and not help people and not guide people and not give people assistance in doing what you say that they should do, then you're a part of the problem. And so once again, the African-American community, we're asking for the absolute wrong things. For me personally, I could care less, you know, if I have white neighbors. That's not what I'm here for. I want to have good neighbors. And I want good neighbors of all races. And I want to live in communities, even if it's an all-black community, where people are working together to build the communities. And we're not, the black community is absolutely not doing enough of that.
Okay, so you were the CEO of the CHA right when the towers, Stateway Gardens, Robert Taylor, they decided—
Rockwell, Cabrini Green.
They decided to take those down. They were, Mayor Daley was going to go in a different direction where we were going to have more spread out, integrated public housing in the city, not these sort of high-rise communities. I've heard the theory, and I want to get your take on this as the CEO of the CHA, former CEO of the CHA, that when that happened, members of those communities were sort of cast out into other communities. They had to find their way to different places. The housing that they were promised never came through. Things just went awry, and it put a lot of stress on different communities, and that's what we're seeing when we see violence sort of in 2016 manifest itself, is that a lot of sort of mixing of communities and lack of social services. Is that accurate? Is that theoretical? Is that something that you believe in?
Well, first of all, it wasn't that Mayor Daley decided to go into a different direction. It's that the United States Congress and HUD said that if it is cheaper to issue a Section 8 housing choice voucher than to rehab a hard unit of public housing, then you shall issue the Section 8 voucher. And what that meant is that all those towers of terror, and I lived in them, they had to come down. So it wasn't that Mayor Daley decided.
Okay.
So they had to come down.
And
not only did they come down in Chicago, they came down throughout the United States of America. And that was a good decision. What the bad decision was, that as those houses came down, the social services that were there, they did not follow the people into the, they did not follow the people into South Shore. They did not follow the people into the South Suburbs. They didn't follow the people into Inglewood or on the West Side. And so those people came out of this social service rich environment, went into the communities without enough services to support them. And those communities rapidly depreciated. And so, once again, those are the people in charge who made bad decisions then that caused a lot of the problems.
All right, let me ask you this. For Black Star, okay, so you guys have been a service, and we talk about, when we talk about Black Star Project, it's social services. It's they're everything. I mean, everything from education to tutoring to everything in between. How do we bring those communities that had seen rapid decline since that happened, 15, 20 years now, to a point where they can rebuild, where they can sort of have some optimism, where they can fight despair?
Yeah. Black Star is in the transformation and enlightenment business. That's what we do. Now, we do programs. We do mentoring programs, tutoring programs, parent development. We do more parent development than anybody in the city of Chicago, including the Chicago Public Schools. So we do that. We do college exposure. We do career exposure. Those are the kind of things that we do. So for your question, we're going to need a lot more of that. The people that we're talking about, the families who can stop the violence, they need to be connected to services that can help them stop the violence. And by the way, we're really talking dollars here. And it is so easy for us to send these people, to send young black men downstate to prisons where they're ransomed for $40,000, $50,000 a year versus maybe sending them to Harvard for $50,000, $60,000 a year. And so we've got to change our mindset as a city, as a country. The black community has got to change its mindset. Once again, the black community is greatly responsible, I feel, for a lot of the problems that we have. But it's going to take new think. It's going to take new ideas in order to fix this. And all I'm hearing from Chicago are the same old ideas that are going to leave us in the same position or worse in the next 3, 5, 10, 20 years.
Philip Jackson is the man behind Black Star Project, which is 20 years old this year. Philip Jackson, my guest at the big table. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
I really appreciate this opportunity.